You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 19 of Nerds Assemble. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And we've got various things up for discussion this week, including Clerks 3, happenings at Vertigo and DC. And our main feature this week is our favourite films of 2012. Who?
If we've seen them.
If we've seen them.
Yay!
Which films did we like the best? It looks like Clerks 3 is going to be a thing.
Yay! About bloody time.
Yes.
Maybe yay?
Maybe yay. basically, Kevin Smith had previously said that Hit Somebody, which was meant to have been a film about ice hockey, was going to be his last film. And he was going to stop filming. He was going to continue the whole podcasting thing and stuff he's got going on. And he's technically got an animated Jane Silent Bob type thing coming out as well that he's going to be touring with, like he did with Red State. But he's now said last week that Clerks 3 is going to happen so long as Jeff Anderson, the guy that plays Randall, agrees to be in it. There's already some like a 70 pages worth of treatment in existence for Clerks 3.
To be fair, I think it would be, well, it wouldn't really be Clerks without him.
So hopefully he'll be like, yes, I'll do it for the sake of everyone's sanity.
But I thought he said that Red State was going to be his last film.
No, he said
at one point.
No, he said Hit Somebody was going to be his last film, not Red State. Believe me, he said he was going to do
who
one
cares?
More film.
As long as it brings us Clerks 3, that's the main thing.
Yeah. For those of you vaguely interested, Hit Somebody is still going to happen, or is happening, but instead it's something like a 6-part TV series with like hour-long episodes or whatever.
To be honest, I just hope that Kevin Smith still kind of continues to kind of make films, even though I know he says that he kind of wants to, you know, step down, and you know, to a certain extent I can understand that, but by the same token...
Well, what would be nice is maybe, I mean, he says he's not going to make films, but what would be nice is perhaps he starts nurturing some new talent.
He becomes his own like mogul.
That would be nice. His own sort of film guru type thing. Somebody who can does a bit of talent spotting and helps people, not necessarily just in the US and Canada, but sort of in other countries as well.
Yeah, it's either that or starts doing some kind of random like part directing with somebody. Like you know, it's a bit like certain. I think it was it Planet Terror? Something like where...
Oh, the whole team up between Rodriguez and Tarantino.
So perhaps if he could do that with like an, you know, somebody like whose directing style is completely opposed to him and just basically have, you know, teaming up and just making something crazy.
That'd be cool.
That does sound
Who do you reckon
be... And then you could call him Mini-Me.
Who do you reckon would be best to kind of team up with for
Kevin
Smith?
I mean, we're not necessarily talking complete genre difference. Mm. I mean, we are talking stylistically different. So somebody who doesn't do amazingly long monologues, essentially. Who doesn't do amazingly long monologues but has worked in the field of comedy?
Or you could actually have it so that he teams up with Quentin Tarantino because they both do long monologues.
But man, the film would be like 4 hours long.
Yeah, could you imagine like a scene a bit like with Inglourious Bastards, you know, so like in the bottom like that, but every now and again somebody just leans over and farts or something.
Or starts dancing.
Oh, there's a joke about finger cuffs or something.
Yes. Or gerbils.
That would be awesome. Or gerbils.
Yes.
You remind me of my cousin Walter, you know.
So hopefully, so long as Jeff Anderson signs on, Clerks 3 will happen. Meanwhile, in slightly weird, slightly depressing news, you might have heard Karen Berger, who's pretty much one of the people who's been with Vertigo from the start, is stepping down. It seems like the way it's been been spun PR wise, it's like, oh, you know, she's moving on. I mean, she's been that, you know, since the early 90s. You know, he's had pretty much almost a 20-year career there, which, you know, that's a long time to work for one business. But, I mean, because of her, you know, many great series have managed to sort of continue. But she was basically executive editor and senior vice president at Vertigo. And no one's, haven't seen anything that's really simple, you know, who's going to be taking her job. And with the kind of stuff that has been going on, like, you know, that we discussed the other, you know, a few weeks back with the whole Constantine or Hellblazer situation, it leaves me worrying about what the hell's going on at Vertigo at the moment, considering it's a DC imprint. There was one commenter that I saw on Comics Beat who suggests that Vertigo will soon only be for American Vampire and Fables because of the way it's going. And I could see that happening. I really could.
I get the feeling that they've got people in charge at the moment who just see it as an IP engine. They're a bit worried that Marvel are having so much success when they've been having success with Batman. And, Batman. And they're thinking, oh, well, if it's just IP, after all, these don't sell that much. We can just do what we want with them. They're basically doing what Marvel did about 10, 15 years ago.
I mean, apparently the whole Karen Berger thing is completely fine and everyone's happy, apparently. But perhaps what's worrying is that in the same sort of week, it was announced that Batgirl writer Gail Simone was leaving and that she'd been told by email, nonetheless.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? That's what I'm referring to, pretty much. The whole thing with the relaunches, you know, which we've already talked about in previous podcasts. But with that, that's the one where it just seems a little bit, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? It's not that she hasn't been doing a good job.
Yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it?
She's popular. I mean, people were a bit kind of like, with the whole New 52 rewriting of Barbara Gording, we're kind of a bit iffy about the fact that Barbara was no longer paralyzed and stuff like that. But, you know, she's previously said that she tried to do it in a respectful manner and really tried to obviously keep still a lot of the essence of the character there. And it's worrying, the changes that are going on. The fallout from the New 52 continuing like it is.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure whether it's setting off full alarm bells, but, you know, two prominent and successful women leaving or being kicked out of basically what's seen as a guy's medium.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not like there's tons of... In indie, there's a lot of women obviously working in indie. But when it comes to the main imprints, the big publishers, the big publishing houses, the numbers of women, like with big video, you know, AAA, the number of women involved on the actual creation suddenly just drops off, something horrid. And as Paul said, you know, having two prominent women kind of disappearing from related imprints within the same month is just kind of what.
If it was like
it's crazy,
it would definitely be setting off alarm bells. But at the moment, it's kind of just quiet alarm bells.
Yeah. For those of you wondering how long Gail Simone's run's going to continue for, apparently her last issue of Batgirl will be issue number 17. So that's with the New 52 number.
They've done really well with this New 52. There seems to be a lot of fallout from it, and they just seem to be losing the plot in some areas. To be fair.
Are they actually? Yeah. Do you reckon they're actually getting what they achieve? So getting new readers in from New 52, or have they just basically dropped the ball slightly?
It's hard to tell because nobody. You get the sales figures for the physical sales, but one could argue that the audience that they were trying to grab from the New 52 wasn't the type of people that were walking into comic book stores in the first place.
Yeah, to get like building their physical collections.
Yeah, so we're talking potentially more the digital crowd, and nobody has sales figures for the digital crowd. I mean, it's worse, I think, than trying to get data out of Steam and Valve.
Oh, God.
To be fair, you know, they I think Valve have actually been quite good for
Used to be, yeah. And trying to get sales data from like the Comixology graphically and all that is like near on impossible. Essentially,
so I think with the digital side, it's still really in its infancy, a bit like music first came out on MP3s and iTunes.
It seems to be quite fractured. Yeah. Everyone seems to be doing their own thing.
Yeah. There's no sort of a proper sort of status quo to go by, is there, with it, which is a bit bizarre. No.
And I have to say, I still don't really like the idea of reading comics on digital devices. I'm not sure about that.
I actually do read comics on digital devices, I have to say.
I don't recommend reading comics on something as tiny as a HTC Wildfire, but on a tablet.
No.
On a tablet, it's quite cool.
I have somebody who's tried reading comics on a Wildfire. I got, because I downloaded from Comixology, like, I think the first 4 or 5 issues of the new Batman. Yeah, that was continuing from the regular, from the previous universe anyway, and the whole sort of Owls thing that was going on. And it was fine up until the last issue I was trying to read, and then they just had this double-page vertical spread that no matter how I held my phone or configured it, there was no way for me to get it to just stay in one position and let me zoom.
Which is an absolute nightmare, to be fair.
So, but on a tablet, it's pretty reasonable.
But then, I don't have a tablet, though, so...
I would still say that a lot of people would be better off buying trades, though, in terms of cost, unless you pick up a whole sort of story arc in like a sale on one of the digital platforms, buying it a week, you're looking at still the same price as physical, but you don't keep the copy.
I recently picked up The Darkness 2 limited edition, which has download codes for the Darkness Origins, so I'll be trying out digital comics on that. I think that's from Comixology.
Yeah.
So I'll be giving that a go. But the issue I have is I can read ebooks on the handheld devices and the like, because that's just text and you can reformat it. You can't really reformat something which is so graphical and where the whole placement of the artwork and the speech has a whole grammar itself.
And not being able to see everything as a whole in one view at the size that makes it readable is annoying, I would say. On the Darkness front, because I haven't read any of the relaunch. Well, I say relaunch. You know, they've restarted the whole thing in the past year or so at Top Cow. And basically, I think, was it about a month or so ago, and we did tweet it and put it on Nerds and stuff, but I managed to get like the first 6 issues free. Because like one of the head guys at Top Cow was like, hey everyone, have the first 6 issues of the new Darkness stuff free. So I was like, yeah.
Is it? Oh, free.
I haven't managed to read it yet, but you know, I'll get there. moving on, just because we're obviously not talking about film enough this week, but the first teaser trailer for Star Trek Into Darkness, the proper teaser trailer, launched.
Yay!
Yay, FemShep returns.
I have to say, it does look quite good, actually. I was quite surprised.
I am unreasonably excited.
Oh, yes, this is Star Trek. You've got to be excited.
Well, the thing is, I'm a Trek fan anyway.
Yep.
And I'm a Mass Effect fan, and I reasonably like, the Bad Robot output so far.
Well, yeah, I was quite surprised with the first film, to be fair. I had actually got myself primed to absolutely hate the reboot, and I was sat there ready to pounce and go, no, this is stupid, do not do this. And I sat there and I was like, hey, I actually quite like this. This has been done really well.
It was so shiny.
Yes.
It's just to give people a taster of what everything's about.
Oh yes, please do.
Here's the audio from the teaser trailer that Paramount released last week.
You think your world is safe? It is an illusion. A comforting lie told to protect you. Enjoy these final moments of peace. For I have returned to have my vengeance. Begin.
And we're back.
Now it
sends goosebumps down my...
Yes.
I have to say, I mean, I wasn't a fan of the original series, mostly because it seemed, you know, Kirk was... I didn't really like Kirk, to be honest. I think that was the main character that I didn't like. Every other character was okay, but Kirk kind of spoiled it for me. But in the reboot, I did actually really enjoy it.
Yeah. You didn't hate the character.
I mean, admittedly, you know, you've got certain things like, you know, teleporting, you know, from like the planet to, you know, moving spacecraft and all that type of thing, teleporting when, you know, they were falling and stuff like that. Yeah. Okay, so it doesn't quite fit.
It's transporting, not teleporting.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yes, but...
I know it's embarrassing for a Trekkie to say.
There's Trekkies and there's Trekkies, you know. There's two camps.
Yeah, I'm more of a Trekker than a Trekkie. The important thing to remember with the original series is Spock is the main character.
Yeah.
Bollocks to Kirk.
Wait, would that mean that? I mean, it'll be a. So, right, I've just thought of basically, you know, the Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would that mean that would be, you know, actually very similar, like style wise, you know, to the original series? Like Leonard would be Kirk, because he mysteriously gets laid every you know, so often. Sheldon.
That is very mysterious.
And she does.
Wallowitz. Who would Wallowitz be?
McCoy.
Okay, I can get behind that.
Or maybe Scotty, seeing as he's an engineer.
Yeah, Scotty would be good fun.
And
but then what's Polly?
Yeah, Kuth Polly.
Chekhov.
Yeah, Chekhov.
I think that works.
Yeah, so,
yeah, I think.
But then I think what I think, but then I think expand this to the girls, and I think who's Wallowitz married?
Bernadette.
I think Bernadette will be McCoy. The female McCoy. it should be very quiet, but yet a very
McCoy. No, I think that would work, actually.
Yeah, it would.
The important thing is, it's like with the original Star Trek. It's the whole Kirk is the main character. No, he's not. Just like Leonard is the main character in Big Bang. No, he's not.
That's Sheldon.
It's Sheldon.
It's the Sheldon show.
Yeah,
Sheldon's just stays.
But they're probably going to rebrand one of the episodes specifically one day about that, and it's going to be some kind of post-event sort of film noir like narrative as Sheldon floats in a pool and just rebrands back the episode. That's my idea, Warner.
Can I just ask, who would Amy Farrah Fowler be?
Oh my lordy. Not horror. I think Penny actually could make a horror.
Possibly the ship's computer.
Yes.
The bridge. That is actually a good answer.
And Scotty would be in love.
Yeah.
With the ship's computer, because after all, the Enterprise.
Okay.
Just quick. Okay. Did you watch the international version of the trailer or the American version of the trailer?
The international version, because there was the one that was on the Paramount International.
Yeah, with the little echo of Wrath of Khan at the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you go, ah,
mm-hmm.
Shadowing.
I've got to admit, Sherlock's in there. Come on.
Yes. Admittedly, apparently, yes. From my previous experiences of Benedict Cumberbatch fangirlism, this means that apparently I suspect a lot of Dutch girls and women will be flocking to see this film.
Yes.
From what I remember specifically when Sherlock was previously on the Sherlock Fever, was there was a lot of it that was Dutch in
flocking,
origin.
You say?
Well, yes. moving on to less pleasant subject matter before we go on to our feature. I'm not sure. It was a bit hard last week not to hear about this, but if you didn't, some PR group for Square Enix decided and executed a Facebook app for Hitman Absolution. This would have all been fine to an extent if it hadn't been for some of the generic non-customized things you could have done with it. Basically, the app allowed you to put a hit on your friends. Fine.
Which is okay if it's a game about hitmen. That makes sense.
That makes sense.
You know,
I haven't actually heard about this yet, so.
Yeah, well, basically, everything would have been fine to an extent if it hadn't been for the generic reasons, which essentially were sort of reasons or attacks that are very similar in their use in real and cyberbullying.
They were really well chosen and hilarious.
Which means they weren't.
Just in case.
Unsure. I can't remember. Could you actually have a custom? Could you write your own reason for why somebody was getting a hit taken out on them, or was it?
No, it was multiple choice.
Okay.
What were these multiple choices then?
And they were gender orientated. So whether your friend was on Facebook was a female or male would affect the options. Female options that you were telling a person why they were having a hit done on them, which involved basically Agent 47 shooting at their avatar. Female reasons included her hairy legs, her top, her small tits.
That's a quote.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah, muffin tops, eye bags, big ears, bad tattoos, skinny frame, bad hair, all of that kind of thing.
You are kidding me.
The sexual ones that were kind of more worrying. For guys, it didn't get too much better because it included his ginger hair.
Ooh.
And I'm not sure if you're a gamer who I read about this on after Rock, Paper, Shotgun, who spotted this, started out, but his shit hair. And I think perhaps one of the worst
things
on the male side was his tiny penis.
Oh, for pity's sake.
Yeah, clap, 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 clap. Whoever thought of that? A comedy genius.
Yeah.
Shouldn't they just be hung and shot and quartered now?
And basically, within the day this thing came out, it was gone. Pretty much.
Good.
Square Enix's response was that quick. I'm not sure who and at which PR company this whole thing was dreamed up, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't Square Enix's own internal marketing team sort of thing. It was somebody they've got a contract out with.
Sounds like it was a load of 13-year-olds dosed up on yellow Smarties.
It was probably somebody with a small car.
I will distract attention from my own by being able to allow others to accuse others of it, and I will get off and get all the girls.
That is really bad.
Finally, a girl will talk to me if I put this app up. All the feedback I was seeing from it was just, especially from within the industry, it was, who the hell give this the okay? Because it cost time and money. This had to be commissioned. Someone had to okay it.
Yeah. A decision maker who can order POs and stuff at some point said, yes, we'll go with this.
yes, this sounds like a good idea. This sounds like the way to spend our money, and this will give us good PR.
Checking the eye on something at the time.
Our game, which we've already screwed up the PR for.
Do we? As Cookies just asked.
They must have been hired to commission that. Nobody in the right mind would have gone, that's a bloody good idea. That's going to give us the best PR ever. Yeah, let's go for it. Woo!
Or they just thought, oh, we're just aiming for the nuts crowd, or, you know, whoever you want
to... In a way, yeah. It's not like I want to draw any more attention to it than I have, because I'm kind of worried that somehow, somewhere, some bloody idiot from the mainstream media will get their hands on this.
Can I just say that, you know, it's there's certain things that would make me delete you from my Facebook. You know, stuff like being a BNP member or comments, you know, stuff like that. I think this would actually class as one of them.
Yeah, definitely. What an absolute muppet.
Because it's just, if you actually see this and then think it's, oh, that's such a good idea, I'll have to use that. It's, I don't want to know you.
Jesus.
It's absolutely incredible that someone thought this was a good idea. I can understand morons in their own time thinking stuff like this is a good idea, but the fact that it was commissioned by a company and paid for, someone got paid for this.
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea if the reasons were actually, you know, more kind of joking and in spirit, but...
I mean, a lot of people that are against cyberbullying and that were especially vocal about how this is a really friggin' dumb idea.
Yeah, the whole sort of concept of putting hits out on your friends is not necessarily a terrible one.
It's the reasons. Fact that,
if the reasons are they're idiotic, they're bullying.
Mm. Definitely.
They're just nasty.
Did I mean, what Peggy rating did the game get? It was 18. Must be an 18.
I'm pretty sure it was.
The target market. I mean, really, their legal target market.
Just beggars belief, to be fair.
Their target market is obviously psychopaths.
The target market is obviously under the age of 18, if you consider how bloody immature the whole thing was. I'm pretty sure there's stuff, you're not meant to do things, you know, that kind of promote, you know, older age products to underage individuals. So that's, I think there's a bit of an advertising standards issue there.
Yeah,
you would not be able to get away with, buy Mortal Kombat and you can play as Hello Kitty.
That would actually be awesome.
Really, that would actually, come to think of it.
Hello Kitty rips your spine out.
Sell this idea.
Fatality.
with little hearts spurting out into the blood.
And then the blood starts.
Oh, that would be brilliant. You know, Hello Kitty will just literally wipe the mouth out of, you know, the opposing character so they can't breathe.
A little smile.
No.
Oh, suffocating.
See, we're there.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Our main feature time, because obviously, you know, we're coming up to Christmas, we're coming up to the end of the year. So this week, next week, we're basically doing best ofs. And essentially, because of the fact that not all of us interact with certain mediums or texts, I'm basically doing films and games. And this week, it's films. So films of 2012 that we really liked.
Moving pictures.
So I dare you to listen to the trailer for this film and then join our discussion.
Yep, try and guess what it is.
So you know about him?
Of course. Do you think he's coming back?
I don't know.
Reckoning. I'm not afraid. I'm angry.
Mr. Wayne.
Remember where you parked?
Your wife said you were taking a cab home.
My wife?
Don't worry, Master Wayne. Takes a little time to get back in the swing of things.
Cookie, it's your turn to talk.
And that was The Dark Knight Rises, which is my choice of film of the year because it's a bloody good film. I loved every minute of it. I actually managed to see it finally last week, and I have to say it was a brilliant ending to a most excellent trilogy on that. And I even liked Anne Hathaway's Catwoman. I know a lot of people didn't, but I actually quite enjoyed her character as Catwoman.
I have to say, I mean, The Dark Knight, I don't feel it was good as... Well, The Dark Knight Rises, sorry, wasn't as good as The Dark Knight, but I think one of the redeeming characters was actually Catwoman in it.
Except for those heels. I didn't like the heels they put her in.
Hey, the heels were fine.
No.
As long as you don't get kicked by them, there's nothing wrong with them.
I will just say, you know, I've been through... I haven't seen the film yet. I know. But I have seen promo pictures of Anne Hathaway as Catwoman.
She was actually probably... I think she's probably been one of the best Catwomen so far on the big screen.
Are we allowed to do spoilers on this?
I don't
know. I quite like Bane as well.
I will be putting a warning before this episode. It depends if Retro can handle them.
You're not going to tell me Bruce Wayne is Batman.
No.
That's ruined it now.
Next, you're going to tell me that Santa doesn't exist?
What are you on about? No, seriously, what are you on about, mate? Santa does exist.
I'm saying nothing.
But no, it is just a class film, and I really enjoyed it. And I think Christopher Nolan did well, and he wrapped it up very nicely. And I even quite like the ending.
Don't spoil the ending too much. I think that would be cruel.
It was quite... It was quite a nice, surprising ending.
La 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 la.
You want to know how I know that Bruce Wayne isn't Batman?
Go on.
Because I'm Batman.
You were waiting for that.
You were. You just led us right into that and we fell for it.
That's what the bat does.
I'm not really trying to describe any specific spoilerness here, but... there are reasons why I didn't like The Dark Knight Rises. Some of them are technical and to do with pacing and flowing from one plot point to another, which I believed was a bit too haphazard and chippy-choppy. And the other reason is that actually perhaps there were too many plot holes for my liking, to put it bluntly.
You don't
lightly.
Like... You don't like your films like your Swiss cheese, then?
No. No, I really don't. Swiss cheese, fine, you can be holy. My Batman films, no! And it had more holes than the previous ones beyond the whole Batman concept in of itself, perhaps sometimes being a little bit unbelievable.
I've got to admit, one of the things that I did actually like about the film is that it did follow one of the known plot points about Batman in general.
Oh, yes.
And, I won't say too much more because of spoilers. And I think Retroid would literally jump down the internet and punch me.
Well, you're not saying anything about Constantine, so you're safe so far.
So, yeah, I mean...
I agree with you on that one, Paul. But, I mean, I do prefer the characterisation of Bane in this one as well, compared to Joel Schumacher's or whatever his name is.
Yeah. But then, do you see that? I mean, I prefer this interpretation of Bane, but then it was so disheartening seeing people sort of complain on the internet that he obviously wasn't the kind of campy one. It's just like, seriously, guys... I mean, the only issue is perhaps, you know, how the frail does he eat? Because nobody ever saw an intravenous drip attached to him. So, you know, there was that slight issue.
The only thing I know about Bane and the whole Batman thing and the, big spoiler, about this film was the whole, can I say about his, chiropractic problem?
Yeah, you can talk about the chiropractic problem. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing with, I remember I wasn't reading the Batman comics at the time, but I heard the whole, story arc of Bruce Wayne / Batman, and no spoiler, getting his back broken by Bane. And didn't Bane take over for a while, or it was something like that in the comics?
No, it was a real nutcase that took over, wasn't it?
Oh, well, that's a change then, isn't it?
I know, he was Azrael, is it?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it was the Knight of Azrael. And he just went absolutely balmy, I think, didn't he? Because Robin ended up going up against him as well. Because he just went against everything that Bruce Wayne really fought for.
Like, lovely capitalism.
Yeah. Sort of.
Yeah, that's... as much as I know. I know the very bare bones.
That's from the story arc Nightfall, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It is an absolute brilliant, brilliant story arc. And Christopher Nolan's vision of this film, it did really sort of bring it to home to me. Because it's one of my favourite story arcs anyway, to be fair.
Which is what you want, because they're making these films with these, like I was saying earlier, we've got these IPs. So yeah, and you've got some really good story arcs, so why don't you actually do something with them, like Nolan has?
I've got to admit, the trilogy as a whole is just mind-bogglingly superior to... pretty much every kind of media, well, not necessarily media, but every kind of film and TV, not necessarily TV, actually, because the animated series, but every film, I'm kind of narrowing that down.
Every film trilogy.
So every film kind of series that there's ever been. I mean, the 90s Batman,
Batman the animated series that we talked about last week. Was it last week or week
before? I was kind of referring to the films.
Oh, the films, right.
They're incredibly hit and miss, and you know, obviously that's to a certain extent because of different directors, different actors.
Tim Burton and Joel Schumacher.
They loved with Michael Caine, and then it just got too camp.
The Joel Schumacher films were mind-bogglingly bad.
Yeah.
I've still got a soft spot for Batman Forever.
See, Batman Forever wasn't too bad. It was Batman and Robin that sort of,
killed things.
Absolutely.
Was that the one with Poison Ivy in?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good God. I like Uma Thurman, but good God.
Had she fallen on hard times since Pulp Fiction?
Yes, definitely.
Just do another scene. We'll give you another cup of gin.
Well, I have to admit, she looked nice as Poison Ivy.
Yes, it was just everything else.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we've... So, Cookie, if you were going to explain to us in, like, a few words why people should definitely love The Dark Knight Rises...
Or have it on their Christmas list.
Or have it on the Christmas list, what would it be?
Simple, it's Batman, and it's dark. It's got the essence of Batman from the comic books, and it's Christopher Nolan's take, which is absolutely superior to every other person's take on it so far.
There you go. All right, we've got our next trailer come up for you. So,
and once again, try and guess it.
the civilized world.
Shred everything.
Our embassy has been seized and more than 60 American citizens continue to be held as hostages.
If we're going to go, then we need to go now.
What happened?
Six of the hostages went out a back exit.
Where are they? The Canadian ambassador's house.
We got Revolutionary Guards going door to door. These people die. They die badly.
White House?
Who wants the six of them out?
What we like for this are bicycles.
Deliver the six bikes, provide them with maps.
Or you could just send in training wheels and meet them at the border with Gatorade.
It's gonna take a miracle to get them out.
Buddy man, what are we watching?
I got an idea.
They're a Canadian film crew for a science fiction movie.
I fly into Tehran. We all fly out together as a film crew.
I need you to help me make a fake movie.
So you want to come to Hollywood and act like a big shot without actually doing anything?
Yeah.
You'll fit right in.
You need a script?
Argo, science fantasy adventure.
Moonscape, Mars, desert.
They need an exotic location to shoot.
You need a producer.
If I'm doing a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir. By far.
You have 72 hours to get them out.
They're getting a visitor.
Have you gotten people out this way before?
No.
You're asking us to trust you with our lives.
This is what I do, and I've never left anyone behind.
I know who they are, and they know they're hiding out.
It's over, Tony.
If they stay here, they will be taken. Probably not alive.
We're responsible for these people.
I'm responsible.
You really believe your little story is going to make a difference when there's a gun to our heads?
I think my little story is the only thing between you and a gun to your head.
Okay, so for those of you who haven't seen this film, which actually, if you're somebody who's kind of like a patron of our local cinema, there's a good chance you wouldn't have seen this film because it was in Screen 4, which is the smallest screen in our local cinema.
Like about a week before being shipped out.
But it doesn't help by the looks of things that one of their projectors went, so they had to cram other things onto Screen 4 after, you know, cramming that beautiful, fantastic, huge feature that is Argo.
I bought a bookcase from there.
Argo. Damn it. Onto tiny screen.
And what does Argo mean? Something unrepeatable on a podcast.
But we said shit earlier. It's fine.
Go on then.
Yeah, go on.
Go on, you can do
One of the main catchphrases from this film, directed by Ben Affleck, and starring Ben Affleck, among others, was, Argo, fuck yourself.
I have to bleep
them. Oh, I've never been so offended. I'm going to complain to the people on this podcast.
We're going to start doing it now.
Okay. Degenerates.
Basically, for those who don't know, because, I mean, okay, this is like a straight-up kind of drama thriller, so it's not your regular kind of geek thing, but in terms of films that I've seen this year that have really moved me, captured my imagination, inspired me, and just made me, and just held me on the edge of my seat, and it did it more so than The Dark Knight Rises, because it didn't have any frigging clocks counting down. Basically, it's about, it's a drama adaptation, or interpretation of a little joint CIA Canadian Secret Service operation that happened between 1979 and 1980 to get a bunch of American fugitives out of Iran after that whole, you know, revolution thing happened and everything kind of went to pot again, from which they have since not, whatever, you know. And basically, Ben Affleck plays the CIA guy who basically thinks up operations to try and get people out of these kind of situations. And they keep trying, and him and a bunch of other people in the sort of CIA departments trying to come up with schemes to try and get these guys out. And actually there's a couple of ladies as well. They're basically all staff from what had been the American embassy in Tehran. And yeah, it's... they come up. I mean, because the whole name of the film isn't based on anything to actually do with the situation or anything. It's based off of the I don't want to spoil too much, really, actually. But then again, it's an historical event that happened over 20 years ago. So
besides that, it'll probably be in a synopsis if you read it anyway.
Yeah, and okay. So it's basically they Affleck's character, after being inspired by
Planet of the Apes.
The Planet of the Apes, yeah, Planet of the Apes. Basically, is like, you know what? Do you know what? We need. So they're looking for cover stories to get the guys out. Okay. Out of Iran. They need something, and obviously they can't get out of there as Americans. You know, that's off the cards. They're basically sheltering down, bunkering down in the embassy, the Canadian embassy at the time, staying with the ambassador there, and basically they gotta get them out as Canadians, you know, because people like Canadians, eh?
They're not talking about.
So you know they're gonna do that. And basically after, they're looking for reasons. And somebody said, you know, one lot of the CIA people's going, like, you know, like language tutors and teachers and various kind of roles like that. Nothing too industrial. Nothing too. And then one of those crazy plans was like, oh, let's try and get them out. Get them bicycles and they can cycle from like Tehran to like the, was it the Kuwait or Turkey?
Yeah, basically a neighboring
country. A bit more. Neutral.
Neutral.
To America. And all of this is just like, no, because they'd be doing it in like the depths of like winter in Tehran, and it does snow there, in case anyone's wondering. It does snow. They have actually got mountains, you know, like right next to the city, it can get cold around there. Anyway, so Affleck's watching Planet of the Apes. And he's like, you know what? Maybe, essentially, you know, we could give them a cover that's like a film production. And so eventually the whole idea of Argo is thought up of, and
well, basically he went through different scripts and he came up with one that was a sci-fi one
that nobody produced
yet. Called Argo, and that's where
basically him and a bunch of Hollywood types who were in on the operation buy the rights to this, and they're developing this, and they haven't completely got like the go-ahead from the top people in the CIA or the president of the US and stuff, but they're still working on this. And they get, basically, don't want to spoil too much more now. They're basically creating this cover that's like, that basically the six people that are held out in the Canadian embassy are going to be a Canadian film production crew, ranging from director through to like
writer, costume designer, that type of thing.
Director of cinematography, that kind of thing, and that they're going to basically kind of go for like a little sort of like shooting tour to see sort of like locations, do a recce and see what places they can shoot at, and then try and get them out of the country. That's basically the main things for Argo, but it's all the tense stuff that happens, because as you can imagine, this wouldn't be a film if this all went happily and swimmingly and to plan. Nothing goes to plan, you know, and from the very start nothing's going to plan, because if everything had been going to plan, these guys wouldn't have ended up hanging out in the Canadian embassy for more than a year. So that's why I like Argo, and that's why it's my film of the year.
It was a very, very tense, you know, right up until the very end, it was a very, very tense film.
Paul's lucky to still have a hand left.
Yeah, I was crippled for 2 weeks. It got that tense.
Blimey.
Yeah.
It does sound pretty cool, to be fair, from what I've heard in the press about it. It's one of Ben Affleck's finest ever films.
Yeah, and it's a weird one for Ben Affleck, because Ben Affleck's obviously... he's renowned for his acting being slightly kind of pronounced, like, you know, he has a lot of talking, he has a lot of kind of forceful characters, and, you know, this one was very different.
He's a lot quieter, far more subtle. It's a complete change of direction for him.
Almost need the director as well.
Yeah, he was director and actor. It was actually written by... Chris Terrio, I can't pronounce his surname because it's a strange surname. And it's also got actors like John Goodman in it and Bryan Cranston, you know, Breaking Bad and Malcolm in the Middle. So.
And also Claire Duvall.
Yes.
I believe it's Claire Duvall.
Probably. Mm-hmm. I can't check it on IMDb because if I do that, then I will fudge up.
Yeah, she's been in. She was in an episode of Buffy on season one where she was like playing an invisible girl. She's been in Heroes as Matt Parkman's FBI kind of
liaison.
Liaison type thing. I think she was in Faculty as well and a couple of other like films.
And if I'm thinking of the right person, she's been in the current season of American Horror Story.
It's okay. Quite possible.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've got to admit, I wasn't sure whether it was Claire Duvall until the credits, because I was thinking, is that Alyssa Milano, who's obviously in Charmed?
Mm.
But no, it was Claire Duvall.
Okay. Moving on to our next favourite film, here's the trailer.
Feel as if time is passing at 1% its normal speed.
If we play this right, we could take the whole city.
Is the manufacturing base for all the slow-mo in Mega City 1.
You know how often we get a judge up in peace trees?
Well, you got one now.
She has control of everything. Levels 1 to 200.
This is Mama. Somewhere in this block are two judges.
That's not good.
I want him dead.
We're gonna have to go through him. Rookie, you ready?
Yeah.
You look ready.
Fire!
Judgment time.
Let's finish this.
Mama is not the law. I'm the law.
I'm going in for the kill. Sorry. If you didn't get this one, then there's no hope for you.
Oh, that's mean.
It's Judge Dredd.
Well, Dredd.
He's the law.
Yeah, or Dredd.
Judge Dredd.
Oh, Dredd 3D.
Yeah, and it's just such...
You really liked the cinematography in it, didn't you?
Yeah, I really did. And obviously it's going to be a lot better than the mishmash that was the 90s, you know.
Stallone.
Yeah. And yeah,
we speak not of that.
I mean, it wasn't like the Stallone version wasn't a bad film. It just...
It wasn't Dredd.
Yeah.
If anyone knew. Yeah.
Well, I mean, admittedly, I haven't read comics, but this one is actually, I do feel it's, you know, superior. Carl Urban's portrayal was very, well, just amazing, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Sorry, you go. Which one of you?
No, you go.
Yeah, which one?
I haven't actually seen it yet. I was hoping it would be better than Sylvester Stallone's performance.
Oh, hell yes, it is.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah, Carl Urban, you'll know from the film's version of Star Trek. Who played McCoy, and Lena Hadley. You might remember her from Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh, yep.
And the 300.
We tried to... I'm afraid we did try to blank 300 from our memory.
But yeah, anyway, back to Dredd.
But yeah, Dredd. Dredd was a beautiful film.
Yeah, it was obviously pretty much the entire film was set in the one megacity with
Megablock.
Just block.
Yeah. You know, just kind of with both of the main characters like in there, kind of having to fight their way up, and I think it did have a certain amount of video game logic to it, and I'm not sure whether I've discussed this. I think I've probably discussed this before about my theory of video game logic in films, which is stuff. Kind of leveling up, so the main character gaining new abilities or becoming more powerful, more than what they were, having harder and harder challenges, and inevitably you should have fighting against kind of grunts that slowly kind of get harder as well, which does happen in this film.
Yeah.
I mean that's cool. Like how a lot of several types of sort of hero's journey type stuff kind of happens.
Yeah, it's video game logic, because video games kind of almost have to be in that way. I mean, it wouldn't work for video games if there was like just boss. True. There has to be, and it has to be kind of progressing, and the character has to be physically progressing, getting stronger and whatnot. So, that's what I mean by video game logic.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, definitely. Just found it visually awesome.
I mean considering the whole one location thing, the fact that they're kind of battling off majorly against criminals, it did remind me a bit of Assault on Precinct 13. And when I say Assault on Precinct 13, I mean the original, because I haven't actually read the remake. Watched the remake. So yeah, not that I don't want to, but yeah, Dredd's just, it's got that kind of claustrophobic. I mean, it's a huge, you get an idea of the vastness of a block, which the comics for me never really done before, but this film definitely managed to do it. And whereas obviously Assault and Precinct 13, they're in a tiny space anyway, because they're in a police precinct, so it's got claustrophobia meant to that, but it takes something to make a gigantic structure seem really gigantic and yet completely and utterly claustrophobic at the same time.
Yeah.
And they did that really well in the film. Really, cool. Really well in Dredd.
Not to mention
the whole track. Sorry.
Was amazing. We bought the soundtrack after kind of watching it, and we did actually buy the version of Going In for the Kill.
That they used in the trailers, but didn't actually make it into the film.
Yeah, but that was also, I think, was it the same version that was used to advertise Bayonetta as well? Or was that a slightly different remix?
I'm not sure. I can't remember the Bayonetta.
But both are, just awesome. It's basically LaRue's Going In for the Kill, but it's kind of slowed down with like a heavy beat.
Because Retro, you've seen Dredd.
Yes.
How did you feel about it?
I was very pleasantly surprised. The fact that it was Carl Urban, you wouldn't know it was Carl Urban, because, of course, it's a completely different character to McCoy in the rebooted Star Trek, and you don't see most of his face.
That was some scene as well.
Yeah, that was a whole promise. So is it the whole part of the problem with Stallone Dredd was that he wasn't Dredd. It was Stallone.
Yeah.
It was Stallone the lawman. And as I've said, Carl, yes, it's the same bloke who plays McCoy in the new Star Trek, but you wouldn't bloody know it because he's Dredd in this.
Which is good.
And it captures the feeling of the comic very well, the whole fact that these blocks are, they're cities in their own rights. They can be locked off, and Mega City is so massive and lawless that's why the judges are, judge, jury, executioner. They are the law because they have to be. So, yeah, just the fact that they even got Anderson right as well. So overall, I was just very impressed that they did actually manage to make a Judge Dredd film, because the original one in the 90s, that wasn't a Dredd film. This was. So it's like, yes, when this comes out on, you know, Blu-ray, I'll be having that. Thank you very much.
How did you feel? Because obviously Carl Urban isn't like the big muscular kind of Stallone type of that, you know, I've seen in certain comics. But I mean, how did you feel about Carl Urban's kind of stature in the film?
I think he worked quite well. The whole thing with Dredd isn't a big, you know, muscle bound brute of a man anyway. He's well built, but he's not massive. It's just his entire attitude. He got the frown. And that was one of the most important things that you have to get with Dredd. You got the frown, and you just got the whole attitude of, I am the law. If I say I'm coming for you, I am.
It annoyed me some of the reactions to Thingy playing Anderson, or even having Anderson as a character in the film. A lot of people you had people going, oh yeah, it's really feminist and pro-woman, and a lot of people go, and then another bunch of people go, no, it's not pro-feminist, it's not pro-woman, because she's still really sexualized and shit. And I was like, actually, the way to tell whether or not an attractive, because she is an attractive actress, that who played Anderson,
I have no idea. I've not actually seen her in anything else.
I couldn't tell you either.
She's an attractive actress in general, and that the way you can tell whether or not a female character has been sexualized in any sort of visual media text is the kind of shot angles that they do, which is called, you know, it's called scopophilia, and basically it's when you essentially fetishize through the shot setup bits of the body, you know, like you focus on the ass or the tits or a certain angle that ends up with kind of like the buttocks kind of looming over and, basically, and stuff. And you really did not have that with the character in the film.
In actual fact, you know, you had shots where like her head was like down, almost like she's kind of knuckling in.
Yeah, the shots were quite respectable of her as a character. They weren't trying to fetishize her body, which for me is how actually no, she's a pro woman character.
Yeah, I felt that as well. She's a strong woman as well.
Yeah.
Because even though she doesn't have, you know, like massive muscles and whatnot, she uses her ability wisely, and she actually, even when the bad guys try and use her ability against her, she manages to kind of twist it round. Get up ahead.
Yeah, I saw some people complaining, oh, why does Dredd have his helmet on all the time? First of all, why are you asking that in the first place? If you call yourself a Dredd fan, why are you asking why does Dredd have his helmet on?
Judge Hare, when they take...
Yeah.
You don't want to see that, man.
No,
like, and,
but you know, he's got his helmet on all the time. He's got his judge helmet on all the time, and Anderson doesn't. Mm. And that is explained in the film, and it was explained in the original comics anyway.
Yeah,
she's a psychic.
Yeah,
and the helmet is armored.
It gets in the way.
It kind of gets in the way.
That whole psychic thing. So. Yeah, so Judge Dredd, definitely a decent film of 2012.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be having it on my Christmas list.
I don't know when's it out, though.
Good point.
Because I don't think it's out anytime soon, because it was only out in the cinema the last 2 months. I know that isn't necessarily a determining factor these days.
I think it's out about February, March time. Isn't it? Just in time for Easter.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got the trailer for our last top film of 2012. Can you guess what it is?
All right, take us round.
Bringing it down in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Prometheus has landed.
Good morning. I am Meredith Vickers, and it's my job to make sure you do yours. Okay, then. On with the show.
These are images of archaeological digs all over the Earth. Ancient civilizations that shared no contact, and yet
Same pictogram, every last one.
It's a star map.
No, not a map. An invitation.
From whom?
But let's say I'm wrong, and you do find these beings down there. You won't engage them. You won't talk to them. You'll do nothing but report back to me.
Miss Vickers, is there an agenda that you're not telling us about?
How far would you go to get your answers?
Look at this.
Prometheus, are you seeing this?
They were right.
You want them to be wrong.
Prometheus, the ground crew.
One of them probes picked up a life form.
She got a pin.
What do you gonna pick?
One click west of you.
Is it moving? What's that? Everybody back on the ship now.
You just stay calm.
It's okay.
If you're going down there, you're going to die.
They're changing.
Changing into what?
What is that?
There's a ship. They're leaving.
To go where?
Earth.
We were so wrong. Take us home! If we don't stop it, there won't be any home to go back to.
Why is that door open? Cut it off! Cut it off!
Get it out of me!
No!
Retroid.
Yeah, I was just waiting. I was giving enough time. Right, and that, of course, was... Yeah, that was Prometheus, which I know has had a mixed reception.
I still haven't seen it yet, to be fair.
No, that does surprise me.
I don't know, it seems like a lot of good things this year has had a mixed reception.
Hmm.
I'd worry about those that don't have a mixed reception.
Mm. Yeah, universally good or universally... Universally good, really? Universally bad, really? Is it mixed? It's like, okay, yeah, I'll go see that. But I was always a big Ridley Scott fan, with his sci-fi especially. And I heard lots of good things about this, and you know, the trailers got my attention, especially the... one of the earlier teaser ones with that nice bass note that kept getting repeated.
Mm.
I think, just to say, with the teaser stuff and the viral stuff, the thing that really got me interested was the fake TED talk they did.
Yes, I was just going to mention that. That was quite well done.
Yeah.
And it was nice and geeky.
It was. I mean, I consider myself to be, you know, quite geeky when it comes to science and technology, and I was like, oh my God, TED Talk. I watch TED Talks.
Yeah. You're doing one of those? But yeah, that worked quite well. But I think the problem was a lot of people just wanted it to explain more about the aliens. Mm. And I mean the aliens as in Alien and Aliens.
Yeah.
And the aliens as in the engineers. And I rather like that it didn't.
I came.
You have some mystery left in it, haven't you?
It did.
I speculated a lot with the mixed reception when the film came out. The people that weren't liking them weren't liking the lack of explanation. Is that we've got people, we've got lazier audiences than we used to, and people are expecting far more now for plot points and other such like to be handed out on a plate to them rather than them to do their own guesswork.
I mean, to a certain extent, what were you expecting? The aliens to be like, oh yeah, we come from a downtrodden race where, you know, we've been you know, virtually annihilated by this group and that group, and we're all you know, so like just wanting to get a home for ourselves. What do we do? Oh, then we go on a spaceship and just kill everybody. They're aliens that run on pretty much instinct.
Yeah,
they are. They're just weird creatures who are designed in one way or another, that's the big question mark there, to be incredibly adaptive and hunt whatever it is that's around.
I mean,
and they will change in form according to what they're incubated in. That's, you know, all we know, really, isn't it?
Did people want there to be like a cave painting or something like that? Of, you know, a bit like the monkey that goes into a human. Basically something that goes into the alien instead. I mean, it doesn't really make sense for, you know, what you would need for a backstory for that, you know, kind of race.
Yeah.
Now, to me, I liked the fact that you did find out things about the, you know, the engineers, as they called them, but you didn't find that much out about it. There were still big question marks. Now, the problem I had was it David Lindoff?
Yeah.
Who had a hand or wrote this? Was that I have big problems with Lost and how that went. The whole last season with you know, they're not all dead. And come on, if you've not seen Lost already, come on. they're not all dead. We promise. And you go, actually, and you go, oh god. So this didn't go off in that direction, obviously, but it left a lot of questions completely unanswered. It sketched out enough, but I liked it in that it seemed to be more of a Ridley Scott film from, you know, the 80s.
Yeah.
In that you could watch it, and instead of having everything served up to you, and you could just come out, you'd walk out the cinema, or you'd finish watching the DVD, instead of just saying, yeah, I like that, or that was a bit disappointing, you were asking, well, did the engineers engineer that black goop? What was it? If they made it, why did they make it specifically? Why did they drop it off on Earth? Why were those star maps around, which led the scientists, you know, to this tomb? So there were all these things unanswered, and I quite liked that because it reminded me of watching things like, you know, the original Alien, Blade Runner, where you could still have the argument of is Deckard a replicant, all that kind of thing.
Blade Runner is awesome.
Yeah, there were enough little hints every now and again. There were one or two issues I had with it, like we've said on a previous podcast, the director's decisions to chop out certain scenes, the deleted scenes.
Yeah,
when they just flesh things out. You're not talking 15 minutes of talking over a computer screen. You are actually talking explanation.
Proper exposition.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I don't know why those were missed out. I don't know why, apart from cynical marketing ploy, they've decided to do the alternate beginning and end on Blu-ray only. You gits.
Maybe it was a storage issue.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't believe that for a second. I think that's just, no, let's try and get people to buy Blu-ray. But oh, God, please buy Blu-ray.
I also have to say that Michael Fassbender's...
David?
Oh, he was fantastic.
David Fassbender's...
No, it's Michael Fassbender. The character was... The robot was David.
Don't confuse me!
So, Ash...
That robot guy on it, right?
You mean Bender.
His performance was excellent because it was kind of... Because he was like halfway to being human, you know, you kind of felt kind of certain sympathies with him, but you were repeatedly kind of, you know, kind of told that, well, not necessarily told, but those repeatedly, you know, you were aware that, you know, he was just a machine, but then you'd feel sympathy for him again. And
he was actually almost my favorite. I think he was pretty much my favorite character in the entire film.
Apart from the woman, once again, the woman. Obviously the woman that I won't say too much more about, but she was a surprising character, I think. Because it started out as like, you know, regular woman, but then it's like, she actually kind of got control and
she developed
fast.
The, the stuff that she does when she's faced with that situation is just, okay, that's quite impressive. I'm impressed with you. Very much in the Ripley mold. She's like, oh, ah, who, oh.
Duh.
That doesn't let you, oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are not pleasurable sounds, in case you're wondering.
No.
You know, these are not sounds. Yeah. So it was definitely, I think, one from this year that needs to be watched at some point if you haven't already seen it.
And if you just didn't get it the first time around, just watch it again.
Yeah, no, you.
I think it's more than worth it.
You've got me intrigued now.
That's good.
You have indeed, yes.
Very good.
Yeah, as I said, there are still one or two little question marks where you can say, is that being clever, or is it just that David Lindelof bloke again? But
yeah,
it's just I'll give it a bit of space. Because if they do a sequel to that, which it was successful, wasn't it, in the cinema, unlike, unfortunately, Dread.
Yes.
I believe it was, to a certain extent, for a kind of, obviously, for a sci-fi film, because sci-fi films don't necessarily generally do well unless they're like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm prepared to give it a chance. I liked what they did.
Oh, and in case, because you probably didn't know this, but the Vatican disapproved of the film.
Oh, good.
However, in the same week that Prometheus came out, Magic Mike also came out in Italy, and they had nothing to say about Magic Mike.
I have no idea what Magic Mike is.
It involves male strippers.
Okay.
There was no disapproval, or notable disapproving sounds about Magic Mike. But Prometheus, they weren't too happy about at the Vatican.
I'm not saying anything about the Catholic Church.
I've never actually heard of any of their film reviews before, so.
All right. Well, that's all we've got.
Vatican gives this 5 popes.
That's all we've got time for this week. Next week, we'll be talking about our favourite games, video games of 2012. And so it is good night from.
It's good night from me, Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul. Either you can find me on Twitter at @onearmed_cookie, or you can find me lurking around the game jar at thegamejar.com.
And it's good night from me, Paul Blewett. You can find me on Twitter as Paul Blewett, and I have a website, paul-blewett.com. Actually, it's hyphen that.
Well, no, you can call it dash. And it's,
whatever.
And it's a good note for me, Emily. You can find me on Twitter at ek6891. You can also, you know, check out my website sometime, which is ek-creations.com. You can also find, you know, Nerds Assemble, goodness, at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also on iTunes, in case you've ever wondered. You can also find us on Games Fiends. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast. And you can find us on Google Plus at Nerds Assemble Podcast.
So basically, there's no excuse not to interact.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah. No escape.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.